It is March 8th, 2020. This is Fancy Ramen, a podcast about video games, anime, and other things nerd culture. I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott.
Did you guys hear that okay?
Yeah.
Oh, perfect. Wow. All according to plan.
Oh my God. Things are on the rails, and so they must go off the rails.
At one point, it's going to be easier if I just have like my phone attached to my 32-channel mixer, and I could just play it off of that, or when Cookie has the file.
That's definitely a flex.
But guys, what are you up to?
Right now, I'm recording a podcast.
Oh, yeah. Oh, tell me about it. What is this podcast like? Is it good?
Yeah, I think it's probably one of the best out there. I'm a real big fan. I listen every week. It's unavoidable, honestly.
That makes one of us. That makes one of us.
There was a good stint where I probably missed like 14 episodes because our feed wasn't working with my particular like podcast player. And I forgot all about it. And then I was sad that I forgot all about the podcast that I have a very small hand in participating in.
Very
you
big
talk
hand.
On it.
I know.
Big hand in participating in.
I have whatever the smallest third of the effort can be.
Third. Hey, without you, we wouldn't have content. And content's king, baby.
Hell yeah. Let's see. As far as what I've been up to, Neil, I'm going to keep it short and sweet. Since we recorded last our very messy spaghetti take on the Somnium Files, a fantastic game, and an even better episode, I believe. stop laughing. Quit laughing. You're undermining everything. I haven't been doing too much, at least in the video gaming realm, but I've gotten a little bit of play done in my free time outside of video games. I've been slowly making improvements to my apartment to make it tidier, looking nicer, more livable and comfortable, all in an effort to make it passable for when I have visitors in town this summer who need a place to stay, and I will just essentially give them my apartment as a free Airbnb.
Nice. Look at Scott getting friends who are coming to visit him during the summer, apparently.
That's right.
It's going
to be a lot better for Cookie and his wife than it will be for my other friend Kyle and his best buddy, because I'm sure you and Lizzie are comfortable sharing a bed, and I don't know how I'm going to get Kyle and Charlie to snuggle up, but that's going to have to be the expectations.
Nice.
Nah, but I've been improving the apartment. It's getting more spacious, these 500 square feet, every day as I buy another shelf to organize something or whatnot.
Are you in a studio? And,
yeah.
Don't you remember he gave us a tour one day? Not on stream?
Yeah. All I had to do is pick up the camera and rotate it. And like once I pan about 80 degrees, you've seen the whole thing. Yeah. It's small. It's tiny. It's expensive. It has a nice view and it's dog friendly. So that's all I could ask for, or the first two parts. And the second two parts, I guess, are the detriments.
Dog friendly.
Dog friendly and nice view. That really lame, but expensive and small. I love it. Great. Fantastic. But I'm looking towards getting wall mounts for my guitars. That's the next thing that I need to do. I got a stud finder. I found the studs. I see that you have guitars mounted on your wall, Cookie. If I remember correctly, you have at least like six guitars mounted or other stringed instruments with similar body types.
Yes, it is. It is six. Two basses, two ukuleles, and two actual guitars.
It's that excellent memory of mine that really keeps this podcast kicking from week to week.
Yep. And then two guitars sitting on the floor like your two guitars. Well, your two basses back there.
Oh, yeah. On the stands. Which I accidentally threw a dog toy into my acoustic guitar maybe an hour ago, and it made that awesome crash against the strings.
Are we going to start a band, guys?
Dwang. Yes, a three guitar band.
I was thinking that Scott would get on bass, I'd be on uke, and Neil would be on guitar.
I would prefer bass, but if we ever need to switch it up, I also have a ukulele, and I also have guitars. So really, you can never know who's going to play what at what moment. Neil, we can't hear it. You got to put it closer to the shotgun. Neil, will you play me an A chord?
It might be a little flat.
Nah, I can. It sounds
like
an A chord.
It sounds nice. It sounds nice.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Can you do an A minor now? There we go. That's what I'm all about. I'm all about that.
Alcade.
that was a good one. Saying it was an A flat.
Snagging on my
on your beard.
Okay.
Yes, my beard.
Yes.
If I could grow a beard, I'd grow it immediately.
You have a 16th-inch beard right now.
He's talking about your beautiful stubble. Your beautiful stubble. Beautiful stubble.
Yeah, I have one too. Cookie's showing off his whole like quarter inch going on there on the chin.
Actually, it's a little less than that right now. I just recently trimmed it yesterday because the wife was like, "Hey, you should cut this," and I was like, "Never."
3/16, I believe, is exactly where it's at. But long story short, apartment tidying and picking up the Netflix series that's gotten so much hype recently that is video game adjacent, The Witcher. I've seen 2 episodes now. Each episode seems to be sort of like an intro episode to characters that I know a little about and nothing about at the same time, because as I tried to explain to Sierra the knowledge I had from playing maybe the first third of The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt, I realized that knowledge was insufficient within about 20 minutes, because she had read a Wikipedia page and already grossly outgrown the knowledge that I had. But it's been good so far. I've enjoyed it. The soundtrack is fun. Henry Cavill actually does an incredibly good job, like imitating the voice actor from the games. Like, he sounds quite a bit like Geralt of Rivia. Really good job on the voice acting. And everybody's colored contacts in their eyeballs freaks me the fuck out. Because their eyes just look really weird. Too big. Too globulous. Too orbular. I'm making up words, but their eyes look very big and brightly colored, and it's a little creepy. But otherwise, the show's been fun and interesting. And it seems like it's starting from the very beginning of things in the Witcher lore, which is great because I have no knowledge of it.
Yes, you do not need Witcher 3 narrative. Witcher 3 narrative, I think, was on its own and the furthest in the thing, as Alcade says.
Yeah, which makes sense. Yeah, then the third game would be the furthest from the original material or the starting material, which is fine by me. But it's been good. I'm going to keep watching it. I'll have probably more fully formed thoughts as I continue, but for passing the time, it's been great.
And I was also saying, I thought you were going to start singing the song.
What song?
There's a Witcher song?
Toss a coin to your Witcher.
Yeah, yeah, I see what you did there. I almost
did
it.
It's very catchy.
It's bad, though.
Oh, yeah, sure, but things can be bad and catchy. There's absolutely no barrier to that. If you think the Fancy Ramen band is going to be making like high art, you're wrong. We're going to be making bad catchy stuff. That's why we've already worked to incorporate that very like folksy A minor into our first act.
I don't like this idea at all.
Very glad that you think that we're going to be making bad catchy music. I just assumed we were going to be making bad stuff.
Well, hey, you got to dream big.
So, I guess I should talk next, shouldn't I?
Yeah, you should, because I'm all done.
Okay, well, while you guys were talking about your Eye of the Somnium files last week, I was out remembering that I don't know how to snowboard.
But you were on such a tiny little hill. We got to see pictures, and yeah. Is it Mount Crescent? Is that where you were?
No, we went out to Winter Park in Colorado.
Oh shit, that was Winter Park?
Yeah, so we went actually to a real mountain.
Your picture made it look super small. You must have been pointing at a different part of the mountain. because I thought you had a tiny hill like in front of you.
No, I wish it was a tiny hill. Nah, the first 15 minutes of the snowboarding trip were me remembering, oh yeah, I guess I haven't been snowboarding in years. How do I do this? Ow, butt, ow, knee, ow, knee, ow, butt. And then I was like, oh yeah, edges. Stay on my edges, and I'm going to be good to go. And then at the high altitude, I realized I was just having such issues breathing that every time I like sat down, it'd be like, okay, now it's going to be a 5-minute struggle to get up. So eventually after the first 30 minutes in the first day, I was like, hey guys, you guys are all on skis. It's fine. I know I'm at the top of the mountain. I will find my way down the mountain. There's only really one way I can really go. You guys go on without me. Enjoy your skiing trip. And they're like, oh yeah, now we're going to take this lift. We're going to go all the way to the top of the mountain. Then we're going to do some things. And then we're going to meet at this lunch place. And I was like, cool, I'm going to find my way down the mountain. You guys go on without me. And 30 minutes later, I text them. I made it to the bottom of the mountain, but it was the wrong side of the mountain.
So you had to take a different route back.
So I literally had to go back up the mountain.
To go down the right way.
To go down the right way. And by going back up the mountain, it just happened to put me like one trail away from the lift where they were at the lunch place.
Mm.
So I just took that lift to go even higher up the mountain.
This all just sounds like it was one elaborate anime episode where you're supposed to get stranded with a pretty girl and end up in like a, I don't know, a desolate cabin.
If that pretty girl is an oxygen tank, I think we've got a pretty good rom-com going
on. Oh my gosh. Do you guys sell oxygen tanks up there?
I mean, I know when I was snowboarding at A Basin back in Colorado a couple years ago, I got to the top and the first thing I thought was like, I could die just because I neglected to bring oxygen. I'm a fool. And then I sort of like half blacked out and then made it down the mountain because holy shit, that altitude change can really mess you up when you're... At that time, I was still living in the Midwest. And so I was like, ah, yes, flatlanders are not welcome here.
Ah, so yes, I also had that idea of, you know what? I saw those oxygen tanks last night at the grocery store. Probably should have grabbed one.
Yeah, there. But now, I mean, I will now. Now we know.
And I was wondering, are you guys in high altitude there in Montana?
Oh yeah, yep.
You're gonna sell oxygen tanks?
Yeah, you can probably. I'm wondering if we can find them at like REI or something. But
probably
we should be able to find them. As far as the hiking goes, I forget that when we go hiking this summer, you and Liz are probably going to want one just in case.
Liz will be fine. I'll want one.
But Sierra also, you know, she has asthma a little bit more than I do, so we won't be taking the pace that I would if I were alone or with some other like real gung-ho trailblazer.
Do you have asthma?
It's gonna be 3 asthmatics and a healthy person.
Yeah, I had asthma pretty bad as a kid. It's quite a bit better for me now. It depends on the activity, but sometimes it can really get me.
Cookie, do you have asthma?
Mm-hmm.
Or is
I can't
it your
go? No, Lizzie's healthy. Ish, more or less. I have asthma. I can't sit at like a hibachi grill, like a hibachi steakhouse, while they're cooking in front of me. That'll definitely cause an asthma attack.
What? Seriously?
Yeah. So when they're cooking, I just have to walk out about halfway through.
So
and then I come back later.
So what you're telling me is that we have three
in your mouth.
What you're telling me is we have 3 asthmatics on one podcast.
Sweet. Are we going to be switching our names to the asthma podcast where we talk about anime, breathing, and other interests?
Asthmatic anime.
I'm pretty sure there's one out there. There's got to be one out there.
I'm sure there's a higher association of asthmatics who are into anime than non.
Okay, real talk. When you guys played Heavy Rain, if you played Heavy Rain, did you identify the most with Shelby, the character who has asthma and that's his gimmick?
Did not play Heavy Rain. I'm very sorry.
3 asthmatics walk into a bar. It's an oxygen bar.
Oh, man, those are great. I'm not sure if you've ever been in an oxygen bar, serial killer, but those are wonderful.
It's a hookah bar, and they all die. Yeah,
no,
I didn't
know.
Wow, what a strong connection the three of us have. Our guitar collections and our asthma. We're practically the same person.
We're also all shit at lead guitar, I'm pretty sure. So you have a band made up of 3 rhythm guitarists that can't sing because of asthma.
Well, that's
and
not
also
true.
Can't play long shows. We'll have to be sitting down when we play music.
I would enjoy that very much. But I'm also a very good singer. Well, an okay singer. A pretty shit singer, but I've got confidence, and that's confidence. All that matters.
It really does do a lot. Confidence is key. Confidence is the replacement when you're not on key. Confidence is the other key.
Exactly. But yes, it was a workout for me doing the snowboarding trip. And when I told them where I was, they were like, dude, you did like 3 times as much snowboarding as we did skiing. You should have just went with us. You worked too hard. And I was like, yeah, probably, but it's fine.
That's the that whole, pardon the pun, snowball effect of beginners going out like skiing or snowboarding on the mountains, is if you actually don't like plan or navigate, if you don't plan your navigation across the mountain really well, or you just make a simple mistake, because there are plenty of mountains where it's like knowing where to go when you're actually on the trail can be a little trickier. You end up like getting off of the route, and then all of a sudden you have to take like 3 or 4 more different runs to get back to where you intended in the first place. And so it's like you make the mistake and then you're punished for making the mistake by having to do even more like snowboarding or skiing and that extra effort and like muscle fatigue.
One would think if you take all greens downhill that you would end up at the base of the at the like, hey, this is where the lodging area is. This is the base of the mountain. No. That is incorrect. Matter of fact, I actually got stuck on a flatland part. I actually had to take off my snowboard and walk for a good little bit because it was just flat and all the skiers are just like...
Using their poles, yeah.
I was just like, yeah, I wish I had that.
You didn't just kick your way over?
I don't know how to do like the weird floppy kick.
Oh man, you don't want to. I think, what do they call that? I mean, it's walking your board. Some people call it like penguin walking, but yeah. If you're doing that on a flat surface, like unless it's a pretty short flat surface, you're going to burn yourself out so fast. I'm talking more about like the skateboard kick method where you unstrap one binding and kick from behind. It can be really tiring on flat ground too, but it's still probably better than walking.
Yeah, so I didn't do that because like I tried it for like a little bit while getting on lifts, and I tend to slip a lot while doing that.
Do you have a snowboard of your own, or did you rent one?
It was my baby cousin's snowboard. I call him a baby cousin, but he's like 3 inches taller than me and graduated from college.
Okay. Does he have a stomp pad on it?
He does not, but I told him that he should definitely get one.
He really needs one.
Because, yeah, I want to say his main snowboard has a stomp pad on it, but he was also going to Colorado that weekend, so he gave me his backup board.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I got the beer.
For anyone interested, a stomp pad is a necessity for a snowboard because your non-dominant foot slipping around everywhere pretty much makes that whole experience very annoying when you're only 1 foot in the bind. And it's like $5 for a cheap one that still works.
I guess, and also a stomp pad would have been useless because he rides regular and I ride goofy.
Oh, shit. Yeah, that still would have been bad.
But yeah, no, just went snowboarding over the weekend and didn't do much game playing. Hey.
But you'll be playing.
That's my life.
You will be playing something, though, right?
Yes, I will be playing The Somnium Files, brought to you by the Brotherhood of the Traveling Switch Game.
What should we send next? I don't have too many physical Switch games, so.
I mean, I have Hollow Knight. Technically, Sierra has Hollow Knight, but I don't think she's going to make much progress on it.
Wow.
That's her own admission, not mine.
Is someone here like suppressing girl gamers?
No, ooh, I'm not anti.
Snap.
No. Wow. I've been trying to get her to play it a lot, and she has not taken the bait that there's cute bugs the further you go in. And so it's challenging. I also think that that's actually a hard game to start if someone has never really played a Metroidvania before. Because it starts off like very limited. Like as your tool set gets better, I think the game increases in challenge, sure, but it gets a little bit easier for the platforming and mobility and whatnot of basic navigation. But that's an option. That's an offer I have. I also have Splatoon 2, which I don't think is one that anyone's interested in swapping around.
We also have. The three of us all have Splatoon, so.
And we also probably all have Hollow Knight as well.
Probably.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do I not have enough? I don't have enough games.
We'll figure something to send to each other. But first, I have to beat I, the Somnium Files.
Can Animal Crossing New Horizons be beaten? Because,
anything can be beaten if you work hard enough at it.
That game might necessitate my purchase of a second Switch.
It is actually, it is resulting in a second Switch purchase in this household, because Sierra wants the custom Switch so badly, like the themed Animal Crossing Switch.
Oh, okay.
That Switch is sexy. That Switch is very sexy.
Is it a regular Switch, or is it
very
a
cool
handheld?
It's a regular Switch.
Okay.
No, it's not
a Lite. It's regular.
I bought her a Switch Lite for her birthday, and she's like, oh, I'm not thankful for this anymore. I want my own. So she's going to buy herself her own Animal Crossing themed Switch, and then we're actually going to... I've got together with my sister and Sierra to get my mom some games for the hand-me-down Switch Lite that was Sierra's birthday present, oh, I don't know, 4 months ago. It will now be a surprise gift to my mother for her to play.
Regifting is just another way of recycling. Way to save the environment.
Does your mom play Tetris?
I don't think she'd play Tetris, but she enjoyed Farmville for a very long time. And I always thought, like, we really need to get her into, like, Animal Crossing, or if there was a new Harvest Moon or Stardew Valley, like one of those things.
Don't do the Harvest Moon, that would appeal to her. To give you a heads up.
I mean, at this point, there isn't a Harvest Moon that's even close to modern.
Well, part of that is because... Oh, no. So there are new Harvest Moon games, but the new Harvest Moon games are not technically part of the same series as the original Harvest Moon games. I feel like I'm going on a tangent, so I'm going to save myself from doing so.
I want to hear it. I want to hear about Harvest Moon.
It's just that Natsume, the company that publishes Harvest Moon in America, came up with that name. And they were publishing or localizing the series known as Story of Seasons. I believe that's the exact name if you did a direct translation over. So the Story of Seasons games that we know of as Harvest Moon, Harvest Moon 64, Harvest Moon A Wonderful Life, Harvest Moon Everything and Anything, etc. That's the series that we're actually playing, Story of Seasons. So those games have kept going on, and there's a bunch of 3DS games for it. And I think they most recently did a collab game with Doraemon, if I'm not mistaken, which seems surprising.
That's a very Digimon-esque game.
Doraemon?
Digimon. Yeah, that's a very Digimon-esque title for a person.
Doraemon is a classic, I think it's an alien cartoon character. If you saw him, you would be like, oh, I know this character, but maybe only in appearance. Anyways, I don't know if there's a Switch game yet, but Story of Seasons, keep your eye out for that, because she might dig that. It also might be a little too story.
Okay, it says Doraemon Story of Seasons is on sale in the eShop right now.
Oh, hey, there you go. But you know what is on Switch? Man, my camera will not focus on me when I lean back. What is on Switch is a game called...
Don't get it.
Yeah, good advice. Let's put that on there, too. It's on sale. It's not worth getting.
What is that game? Stardew Valley. Maybe she'd like that.
I think so.
Then you could play with her.
I've never played Stardew Valley.
Well, good news. You can buy two copies and play with her.
But Sierra plays Stardew Valley, or has played.
Sierra can play? Then I can join in and ruin everything, because I'm a bad farmer.
We just wouldn't do any work. You guys can do it for us. We're going to go fight in the dungeon. The mine, I guess, rather. It's a fun game.
I think
game.
Cookie's just going to go around fishing. Just become the fishing master.
That actually sounds like more my style, my speed. Yeah, so that's what I've been up to.
Neil, how about you?
What have I been doing? I've been streaming, like always. I beat Aviary Attorney, and I'm going to say a spoiler.
Okay.
So just in case, like, giving anyone a second, I have to look up the guy's name again because I am that bad.
Covering my ears.
Jacques Chirac.
So there is some historic pretense to totally enjoying Aviary Attorney. And that is because, as it's kind of hinted at for a long time in the game, the main character, JJ Falcon, is
JJ Falcon.
Turns out to be the grandson of someone important. It's brought up occasionally. And this takes place during the revolutions of 1848, I think, if I'm not mistaken. But after
that sounds correct.
After the big revolution in 1799 or 98, whenever the French Revolution as we know it would be. But what is especially fitting for the game as a defense attorney is you turn out to be the grandson of Maximilian Robespierre.
Mm.
Except you're a bird.
Obviously.
Which, like, I kind of had to Wikipedia up and Google it. I was familiar with the name Robespierre, but I couldn't remember exactly who it was.
Google, did Maximilian Robespierre sleep with a falcon?
Oh, yeah. As Alcade says, it's a really cute game. Like, I love the artwork so much in it. And the story is, like, pretty top-notch. There's three different endings. The only thing that I'm not super keen on is that the game is made up of four chapters and four cases, but I would almost even say that the fourth case, which actually deviates to three different cases and endings, is way less of a case and way more of just a straight up epilogue. But all in all, like, I really enjoyed it. I think that was maybe one of the most charming visual novel games I've ended up playing. That didn't have to do with super crazy serious stories or crazy fourth wall breaking events. And didn't have to do with romance for that matter either. Like, just a solid, great, fun experience.
There's a game where you're a bird and it doesn't have to do with romance?
My God, right?
Everything should just be Hatsuful Boyfriend, honestly.
When is Hatsuful Boyfriend VR coming out? That's my question.
Oh, never, never. That's too spicy. Too spicy.
But birds aren't affected by spiciness. They're immune to capsaicin.
Which is why...
This has been Bird Facts with Scott.
Which is why in Japan, certain farmers or ranchers or whatever you would call them, give a lot of cayenne pepper, ground up cayenne pepper, to the chickens.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is that colors the yolk to be like way more of a deeper orange color, which I think is... I don't know if it's necessarily true, but like usually when you have a deeper yolk color, it tends to mean that it's a healthier chicken. Though this is just a fake way of giving off that impression.
I mean,
I was thinking they were just trying to make buffalo chicken naturally.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it's true that the best eggs I've ever had, like farm fresh eggs, have had very like vibrant yolk colors.
Yeah.
But I've also gotten farm fresh eggs that are like, what is it? I got an egg that was like slightly green once on the outside of the shell, and then the inside was neon yellow, and it made for the most amazing omelet I've ever had. But it looked at. Actually ate. Like, it was delicious. The omelet was like laser lemon, if I can use a patented Crayola color. It was super, super bright yellow and phenomenal, and had very few components. So I know that the egg was doing the heavy lifting on the flavor there.
Nice.
So we went from starting about video games to eggs in a very, you know, in a
weird way.
Yeah.
Talking about birds.
That's true.
That's why we always use that disclaimer at the front, you know, like 30% of the time, where it's, yeah, about video games and all this other shit that comes along with it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't really have anything else to talk about video game wise, though, I don't think.
Really?
It's going to be a short ish podcast, but I do have some good news, I guess, for the podcast.
We've got 10 viewers.
Yeah, we bumped up to 10 viewers.
Wow, thank you, everyone.
Milestone.
This means a lot.
We're only halfway to what the... Oh, for the love of... Next, yeah. You're going to bring one of those air horns into
I hope it's not a gimmick every 10 viewers, though. It's going to get real rough.
Next one's a cowbell.
Okay.
Clink.
Go ahead, Cookie. I'm sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, what's the news, Cookie?
Oh, yeah. So I decided that the first Friday Night Fights, I'm going to start streaming it every Friday. You can see the VOD from this Friday's thing. We were playing a minutia of games for about 4 hours. And I also started a new channel called Fancy Ramen Cookie. And I'm kind of just going to be doing like a cookies flavor of the week type of videos on there. So whatever interest I have at that time.
Wait.
Videos.
You Fancy just, ramen with cookies.
You could have just changed Cookies of Milk to that too.
I don't actually have a YouTube channel with Cookies of Milk.
Oh.
It's my own personal YouTube channel.
I see. Okay.
With my real name of Christopher Rhodes.
So,
you're going to release your alias here?
So,
alias. Yeah, I like it.
Just for those nine viewers who are really sticking in with us today.
So, do you have a way that you can get your audio to be more present during your Friday night fights?
I was actually looking at shotgun mics.
If you're going to do shotgun mics, be aware that the room is going to be present if you're going to have it, you know, be like, even
I was actually even I was actually far. Thinking of I was thinking of having them having the mic sit on the floor in front of the two people fighting, and then if you were around for like the very end of the stream, so like the last hour or so, when I wasn't playing, I was actually sitting at the computer commentating on the fights. So, or I might end up doing something more like that.
Would someone say you were shoutcasting?
I would like to think of it more as talk speaking, talk streaming, because shoutcasting makes me sound like I knew what I was talking about and was being professional with it.
And being loud.
I think that's the term they use for esports, right?
That is the term they use for esports.
Can you guys still hear me when I have the mic this far away now and turned up a bit?
Actually, no, you're a little louder even.
Oh, it's because I did jack up the gain a bit.
That's too quiet now.
It's too quiet now?
Yeah, it is.
Then what about now?
Now it's too loud. We're going to play this game today.
How about now?
That's perfect.
Ooh, that
Don't break
good.
Out of that recumbent, like, lean.
Such a pronounced voice. But I just want to say though, shotgun microphones are not cheap solutions. Like
I was going to say, shotgun mic I was looking at was $25.
That's going to sound like shit, man.
You might as well talk into a shotgun barrel.
So, I mean, to give you context, why this one can sound okay, and granted, it probably sounds roomier for me, or roomier than I'd like, because maybe I'm picky. But like this is also a Sennheiser 416, so this shotgun is way more than you would imagine.
$499.
No, this shotgun is $1,000.
Oh, okay. See, I thought you were going the cheaper route, but nah.
Well, so I don't use this just for like a fucking podcast microphone. We need a $10,000 microphone, exactly, Alcade. I use this for all of my remote sound, or a lot of my remote sound. Like this is my outdoor boom mic. Which happens to work within the context of a podcast and stream.
Hey, Neil, I have a question for you then.
Sure.
What are you doing on first Friday nights?
Oh, do you... Okay, so... I don't like leaving my house, man. But
I know you don't.
But what I was going to suggest, though, honestly, if you wanted to... And this is maybe something that like people in chat might appreciate, too. Is if you ever wanted to go crazy, not even crazy, I take that back. There's a company called Audio Technica, and I hope you guys can't hear me typing right now. Audio Technica is known for making a lot of like pretty damn affordable microphones that usually bat above their
price range.
Yeah.
I also like their headphones.
I've heard very good things about their headphones.
This is not meant to be like an endorsement or anything else. It's just they happen to have like a cheap product that I see all over the place. Like you see streamers that are like crazy rich and doing super well off, and they're still using like one of the baseline Audio Technica microphones. But they make a mic called the AT2020. It's like $100 at the base version. It's an XLR one, so it would work with your audio interfaces. Just set up a couple of those and put them on stands and get them up into their grills, into their faces. I don't know if you've heard about the channel before, Cookie, but there's a channel called Wooly Versus. And he does fighters in the same, in like a similar fashion. He does like these fight nights. And you should check him out, by the way. He's awesome. They just use a bunch of AT2020s for everyone. And it's a lot. But okay. Then I just realized that you were talking about a $25 shotgun. And this is obviously $100 instead. Oh, feels bad.
So I'm also selling off like a bunch of like random things at my house to afford to make the streams and streaming stuff better.
Is that why you want the camcorder as well?
Yeah.
Okay, so you'd want one that you can get a clean HDMI out as well then, right?
So no, I will actually still be streaming off of the C20 for the actual stream. The camcorder is going to be more for the YouTube content.
Okay.
What's up with that face? I mean, eventually I'll look for a camera with a clean output, but I think I'm going to go with a DSLR on that one.
But that's
also going to be a lot of money.
Did you just insult my face, by the way?
Yes. You did that thing with your chin that you do some... Yeah, that thing.
It's like, I don't know, I'm going to call it the Asian chin.
I didn't want to say it because I said something racist the last time I was on podcast, so I'll leave it to you this time.
You can only expend so many of those, Cookie.
But yeah, no, that's why I'm looking for the camcorder, for the actual YouTube channel.
Okay.
And getting good footage and whatnot. And I realize if I want to actually go with a DSLR that does a clean HDMI audio signal / I can hook up to the stream cam from Elgato that then just allows it to capture that. Yeah, the cam link. That's what it's called.
Is this becoming an informative podcast about streaming? Because I enjoy talking about this stuff too, by the way. But you're right. You could absolutely do that. The other alternative technically is that a lot of the HD60 series can technically do camera stuff, although it's not necessarily designed to. So if you find it cheaper, if you find an HD60S, for instance, that's cheaper, you could go that route with a clean HDMI output.
Oh, nice.
Or, although the cam link is going to be more intuitive, the other option is you don't go clean HDMI out, and then you just crop as far as you need to in to cut out the overlay. So, but that's actually what I'm using right now, a DSLM, technically, a G85, so.
Okay.
And it's okay. It looks so pretty. The image gets grainy on certain things, like the blue here is fuzzy looking. But I'm also only using one light right now too, though, so I'm pretty lazy. Trying to get that contrast between my, like, the front of my face and then my cheek, so it doesn't look like, ooh, see, if I can reflect the light there. So it makes me look like I have a more pronounced, like, jawline.
It's a very beautiful jawline.
And then you get those pronounced dimples here.
Dimples, the big dimples.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Big smiles, big dimples.
No, Al-Qaeda, I don't have a manly jaw until the light comes into play.
It's all an effect of shadow. This is showbiz.
Exactly.
Oh my god, we're a video game podcast, right?
Yeah, video games. But
no,
like, who's played video games this week? I mean, I've played games, but like I talk about them a lot on stream, and there's not much I'm playing outside of it.
Since we spoke last, I played all of Celeste's main story.
Oh,
I'm proud of you.
And
did you play it on easy mode?
I got good at... No, I didn't. I played on whatever the regular difficulty is.
Oh, man, that was too difficult for me.
It's tough, but it hones you into a sharpened edge. And I then went on a quest to... What I did not know about Celeste, first off, it's a wonderful game. it was on sale when I picked it up for some like extremely reasonable price, like $6 or something, especially for a game of its caliber. And I think like it's not that old. It's 2 years old tops, right? And as far as content goes, like there's a lot of content. I think it normally retails at $20. That aside, Celeste is a phenomenal game. The music is wonderful. The platforming physics feel super, super clean. And it has more challenge and content than I think most people who will play it will even want out of the game. The main story really does get to a point where it forces you to play at a completely different level than you did when you started the game, much so to the point that if you actually go back and play an early level again of like the original difficulty, you should have probably under like 5 deaths for an entire like chapter or region, and chances are you'll be like pulling off tricks where you won't even necessarily need to use like certain dashes or approaches that you did when you originally like played those challenges or platforming puzzles, which is really cool. Like that's quite the improvement. It's the whole concept of like if you play Dark Souls Sword and Board the first time, if you like really get comfortable with the mechanics of the game, the next time you play, you might not use any sort of defensive like item at all, and instead just start two-handing and like dodge rolling everything. It really ramps you up into having like just better and better performance at the game. But what I wanted to say is not only was Celeste a blast kind of from start to finish, and it had an interesting story to tell in tandem with you like learning the mechanics and getting better at the game, climbing this mountain, your character is also trying to like manage their anxiety, and they do a really good job of like manifesting that character's anxieties into actual like challenges in the game, which is really cool. But every level, there is a B-side tape hidden somewhere in the game that is blocked off by these like tempo related puzzles where you can only like move through the environment at a certain speed or tempo to get to the B-side tape. And then what the B-sides unlock is once you've beaten the game, or I guess you go back to the menu, you can play a much harder version of that level. So it's essentially like all of the mechanics of the original level that you played, but like turned up to 11 on the dial. So they're super, super difficult, and they require advanced techniques that you really only see folks who have like reached the end of the game using, and the like very talented people who are insane enough to like speed run this game or try and do like no death challenges and whatnot. And that stuff like grabbing onto ledges where there's just like 2 or 3 pixels available of safe space, which feels really good when you do it. But if you're like me, you still die 25 times before you do it, and then you die right afterward again, thus resulting in having death counts at the end of each chapter in the original, the A sides, you could say, or essentially the like main story plot, sometimes totaling in the hundreds. But I think even on the levels where I like ate shit repeatedly, 250 or below, somewhere in the death count of like above 25 for every level, below 250. On the B sides, the very first B side I played, I had 1400 deaths. A massively difficult swing.
Way to up your score there.
Man. Yeah. They count all your deaths too. There are stats for everything. How fast it takes you to complete things, how many times you die, and it's just all tallied behind the scenes, and you really only see it if you want to see it. And once you look at it, you can never rid yourself of that shame, as I've found.
Are you exaggerating?
Taunted by the failures. No. The number is right. It was like 1420 something for that first B side I played, which I assumed is the easiest B side because it's using the least like new mechanics. Yes, 1400. And that is why it's very important that this game has almost no load times from one death to another. Because if it had a Dark Souls loading screen, I would not play it. I would not play it at that difficulty. But because as soon as you die, you're obliterated and you start right back at whatever checkpoint you're at, you can just throw yourself headfirst into it over and over. And it honestly is like... I believe the game is Super Meat Boy, where you get to see all your Meat Boys try and make it to the end. It's like that, but because you're dying so frequently, it's almost like you're doing that in real time, where you're just throwing your body repeatedly over and over. And there are challenges on these B-sides that are so difficult that it is maybe for a puzzle that has 8 moving parts. I can think of one in particular. You can essentially have 8 different like moving parts of this puzzle that you need to execute, but to do it right and with the timing appropriately, you're going to do all of that in 3 seconds, or you're not going to do it right at all. Like, you will either instantly fail or instantly succeed, and you hone that like half a second between each thing that you're doing over and over until you perfect it. It's like learning to play piano. It truly is like... You just have to master a core element before you can move forward. And that's the other thing that's so difficult about it too, is unlike playing piano where perhaps you can work on a middle section of a song because you're having the most difficulty with it, and then go back, start at the intro, which you have maybe a little bit more understanding of. And then when you get to those core measures that you've recited over and over and over, you can finally... make that work with the cohesive whole of the piece. This is the piano teacher who slaps your hands and says, no, from the beginning, over and over. There's no working on that particular part until you've mastered everything before it so much that you can then start approaching that difficult spot with like repetitive frequency.
And that's where Celeste turned me off. The checkpoints were too infrequent for me in the later games, especially once you get to the parts where like the wind is going in the opposite direction of you and you've got to be very precise with your jumps. And
yeah.
It's like, okay, I've been on this level for 30 seconds and then I died. Surely I had hit a checkpoint. I did not hit a checkpoint.
No.
Fuck.
It's like every screen is a checkpoint essentially. So if you're panning across a long section, you know, kind of for that whole section that there's no checkpoint.
Yep.
Yeah. And go ahead, Neil.
Did you have any points where you were close to dropping the game because you hit a wall? Or I don't know if that's in your personality normally.
But... I was going to say, he plays Dark Souls and Bloodborne. It's
I don't
not
think
his
they're even that bad
Zen,
normally.
Baby.
But
it was super hard. There were times on that B-side, on that first B-side challenge that I did, where I thought, oh, I'm just not good enough. Like, I'm not mad. It's not my fault, but I'm not good enough at this. Like, I just don't think I can do it. And then when I did it, I lost my shit. It's absolutely like one of those heavy, heavy buildups of that like dopamine or serotonin release, right? Where you work so hard at something and you feel like you're up against an insurmountable task or challenge. And so when you do complete it, it is just a flood of endorphins and like reward. And it comes earned. Like I don't know anyone who could do those B-sides and not feel like, wow, I did something very good. Like, I did well. I should feel proud or happy or accomplished.
Not to demean your accomplishment, but when you say 1,400
Will you
attempts,
stop right there?
Part of me is thinking, like, are you sure it wasn't a fluke?
That I got it? No, because what's really interesting about it, too, is that there are sections in that B-side. The idea is like a lot of these challenges are supposed to be amplifying in difficulty. But part of it is like, yes, the puzzles are all going to be unique. So the difficulty of each puzzle is going to be somewhat subjective to what you're good or bad at. But the level of complexity of each puzzle is like slowly increasing as you go through these levels. That's true for the A-sides, which is the main story, and the B-sides. But for the B-sides, the trick is like, there's normally a sinister element to each puzzle as it like increases in complexity. And my 1,400 deaths, like a lot of them actually came from the middle part and not the final stretch. And the final stretch is the, I think they're presented as the hardest because it is the longest, it is the most marathon style puzzles where you can't make any mistakes for an extended period of time. And they're still very challenging and difficult. Where in some of these middle puzzles, I'm talking about, you know, it is like it's 3 seconds from one end of the screen to the other, but you have to execute everything perfectly to do it. And part of it was like figuring out not only how to solve the puzzle kinetically within the game, but also then performing that function. Meanwhile, those like marathon segments, a lot more of it for my accomplishments was getting into these and then reacting with like the next step or solution. It's kind of like if you're rock climbing at a high speed. Like if you're rock climbing and you're able and you have difficult things to do, you can plan your route. But this is like being chased up a rock wall, these marathon segments where it's just like you can't really see what's going to happen next. So the way that the game is going to challenge you is one of two ways. If you keep failing, you're going to keep moving to like the next segment and then figuring out like, oh, this is what I need to do here now. Like this was a trick to throw me off of my momentum or get me to commit to a different direction or even just like I didn't time that properly. And those sections I really excel at in the free form like reaction within the moment to do something just right with my timing or my angle or something. The stuff that really tripped me up is like, yes, you have to jump on this platform, launch yourself, and then like dash in this particular spot, tuck into a duck momentum so you don't get spiked on the head, and then jump out before this other platform stops moving and dash over. Like that is one where it's a lot of like really fine actions in a very short period of time, and that's much harder for me than like doing something perfectly right one time and then getting a half second or a whole 1 second like break before the next challenge comes up. But they're just two different types of difficulty, and like one of them I did good on. The other one, yes, it's like it's sort of a fluke, but that's only if I say fail at different segments every time. But for a lot of these, it was like I would fail at the first part a bunch, and then I would fail at the second part a bunch, and then I would fail at the first part a bunch again for some reason, and then I would fail at just that last bit, and I'd get the other stuff over and over just right. And so that's what I'm talking about, like having to reset from the beginning every time to face a challenge and improve on it versus... like being able to methodically approach each challenge from an individual section. And the game is like chock full of really cool secrets too. If you're willing to throw, like if you're willing to throw yourself at a brick wall repeatedly. Sierra and I spent 30 minutes on a section where she was like, I don't think this can be done. There must be another way. And I'm like, I think theoretically there is a way, but I have to be pixel perfect. And so for 29 minutes, she was right and I was wrong. And then on minute 30, I almost like screamed and let go of my controller because I got it. And I found a secret. And this secret corresponds to like some sort of hint to these secrets that happens close near to the end of the story part of the game before you get into the like challenges and chapters where there's only... I can infer that there's only like six others of these secrets. And then I solved another two. And so there's like three more that I just never found or need to find. And those challenges were definitely arguably the hardest things to do. It was just like one thing on like one frame on the screen that I had to figure out how to solve. And it was near impossible. But then you get it and you get the secret. And it's that same result of just like, wow, I really did something amazing. I feel really good about this. Don't look at my death count. It's not a fluke. It's not a fluke. I'm learning. I swear to God, don't look at my death count.
I just want to confirm something real quick. The 1,400, that's for the entirety of B-side?
That was for a single chapter the B-side. It was for one chapter with maybe 30 puzzles or frames or something. And how most of these chapters would take 30 minutes to complete. This took me like an hour and 45 minutes to complete.
When you say frame, you mean like screens or save points,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, a frame is a screen. And so like, that's what I mean, like one screen, but sometimes these checkpoints, right? It could be like three screens and that pans over it, for a section before you get to the next one. But it's the basic premise of like many video games where you walk to the edge of the frame and then the frame, you know, it almost sticks and it slides over into the next frame. Like the screen essentially moves to another segment. You feel like you're crossing some sort of threshold or barrier. And that's how I'm trying to, I guess, describe it. Is like a frame is when your screen never moves, and puzzles, for the most part, were one frame. But you could say like there are some puzzles where your screen would pan over maybe what would be, if there were those barriers, three separate frames. So like I would consider a long puzzle like maybe a three-frame puzzle.
Okay,
because there's three sections that it pans over, but it doesn't stick on the boundaries because you haven't hit a checkpoint. Oh, and this is actually a really good point made by someone in the chat, Alcade, that he's saying it reminds him how, or I'm sorry, not I did not mean to assume. They are saying it reminds me of how FTL and One Way Heroics can be pretty brutal. It does feel sometimes like these games like Into the Breach or FTL, where these insurmountable challenges actually become way more approachable once you just have like a much deeper understanding and comfort with what you're doing. Like I've played FTL now for probably 80 hours or something, and the challenges that used to immediately mean like a wipe for my run are now just like, oh, I know how to approach this. I need to do this just right. Like I can still fail at it, but I have the tools to address the challenge with a much better success rate than when I first started. And half of that is building skills and knowledge, and half of that is being just a little lucky in FTL. In a game like Celeste, there's no concept of luck. Everything is responding to an input from you. Everything is timed in a specific way, so you are the only thing that is modifying or inputting to the environment. Yeah. Cookie, I would really push you to get back into it. There are a couple boss fights. You've definitely already experienced one, I think, if you did the hotel. Yeah. That boss fight is interesting, but kind of lame. There's another boss fight with your shadow self later that is one of the coolest moments I've had in gaming, just because it's so different from any other boss fight I've ever had.
That's right after the win part, right?
It's a little further past that, I think.
Okay, yeah, I think I've done that one as well.
Where you chase your... in the jungle? Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, to have a fight where... Excuse my dog in the background. He's trying to get some camera time. But that's a chase scene, Neil, where you are chasing your like darker self, your negative side, and essentially trying to give yourself a hug. And they're trying to obliterate you with laser beams and like heat-seeking shadow orbs and shit. And it's really, really cool. It's very fun. And the music for it's phenomenal. Like there are times where the music is good. There are times when the music is just like, I think, perfectly aligned with what you're trying to do. I get why this game gets so much praise. I'm happy I got to rant about it for a little bit.
I'm scared to play it because I have a feeling it would take me a very long time to play it.
I don't think it's that bad. You got to take it. I played it
take
every,
it one Dark Souls at a time.
Yeah. I played it every day and for a lot of bite-sized segments of an hour or less, many of them were like 20 to 25 minute plays. Essentially, play a chapter, call it quits. Play a chapter, call it quits. And there's like 10 chapters approximately. That's a really rough guess right now, but it's great. And then each puzzle, like there are puzzles that are unique to areas, but they often build off of other mechanics that previous puzzles do. So like blocks that have moment or platforms and blocks that have momentum are introduced in the very first chapter. And then later in like one of the much later chapters, there are blocks with momentum, but there are other things that are manipulatable about them that like really adjust how you can use these tools and challenges together. They require all that understanding of the first chapter's introduced mechanics, but they also require better performance by the player to manipulate them in the way that is actually advantageous to you. It's challenging though. I mean, I won't lie. It's a hard game. I died a lot, but it felt worth it at every step. And Cookie is right about some players may find the checkpoints being a little too challenging, like it's spaced out a little too much, but it's super, super user friendly because there is this way where you can like essentially change the difficulty. I never touched it, but I mean, that's a way to do it too. The thing that makes me worry about it is like, I don't know if I can trust myself to modify the difficulty and then play it the normal way after that.
So actually, I'll say that even though I was playing it on the easier difficulty, I did keep with the 3-dash limit in trying Koala to regain my dashes. But it was good having the unlimited dashes.
There's an unlimited dash option?
There's an unlimited dash option. That's the one I picked. So that way, if I just happened to barely miss time that last dash, I had just one extra one to help me out there.
I wonder if you can access some of the secrets if you have unlimited dash.
Probably not.
Yeah, maybe they're just like, they don't appear if you have that activated.
The reason I'm scared of Celeste is that when you have a double jump in any game, my nature is to jump at the top of your first jump. It's what so many platformers have taught me before.
But and Celeste will break you of that.
Yeah, Celeste wants you to jump at the bottom of your jump as you're falling down to your death. It's also why I'm horrible at Smash. Because you don't do the double jump early. Like
it's less about achieving verticality and more about achieving mobility with the jumps. And if I can preview a little bit, you do get you get mechanics that restore your energy to like dash midair or to grab on things a little later, but you ultimately get a second dash as part of the game. So like you get essentially a jump and then two dashes available to you. And those puzzles get very hard because they are built now with this assumption that you can traverse and have a lot of like technical movement within a space. And so they really start throwing a lot of like almost maze like maneuvers and falls into how you move around. The summit is so cool. I love the last leg of this game a lot too. After you've gone through every section of puzzles and like learned mechanics and achieved a couple of like upgrades to how you can move, the game throws you off the mountain, which is like, sure, it's a spoiler, but it's a spoiler in the sense that like your character at the end of the level stands on a platform that has nothing below it, and there's like obviously solid supports on either side. And so as soon as you step out there, any adult is going to look at that and be like, that looks like a really precarious place to just like sit down and camp for the night. I wonder what they're going to do with this big chasm that we're camping over. So it's not a surprise to anyone who's done any like who has any sort of like foresight into that. But you get thrown off the mountain and then you rapidly reascend essentially through the sections, which is already like a really cool concept. But when you get to the summit area, which is the last challenge before you finish the game, the summit essentially is like 30 checkpoints. It's like 30 little flags, and each one is its own micro puzzle that you have to complete as you climb to the summit, and each one tests your abilities to an extreme in a particular challenge. It's really, really cool. And it's definitely the most satisfying part about the game. It's one of the few games that's just like, okay, here's what you learned. Here's your pop quiz on everything. Like, how much did you retain? You have to retain all of it to pass. Like, you got to get 100, and until you get 100, you're stuck here.
Gross.
I don't know. I love a really, really good challenge, and I think that it's very accessible because they make it so bite-sized.
Yeah, I could see that.
What else have you guys been playing?
I picked up In Birth Under Night.
Oh, I watched you play that a bit. That's right.
For the Friday Night Fights.
That's the most anime game I think I've ever seen you play. If I don't recognize it, it has to be pretty pretty
okay,
niche.
In Birth
Under Night, I believe is what the game is called. Or Under Night In Birth? Oh my gosh, somebody help me.
Under Night In Birth.
Yeah, Under Night In Birth. I will say that is an interesting fighting game. It's got, from basically what we were playing, because we didn't do any kind of tutorial, that was my first time booting it up for the Friday Night Fights. No one had played it before, and it was like, all right, the first round was pretty much me and my older brother doing a button check of, okay, does this button do things? Does this button do things? Does this button do things? So it's a 4-button fighting game using the face buttons, so X, square, circle, triangle. X being a charge for a middle meter that gives you access to something that looks like a Roman cancel but doesn't actually push things back. Square is going to be your light attacks. Triangle is going to be your medium attacks. And circle is going to be your heavy attacks. Square, if you tap it a lot, it's going to do an auto combo. It's like a nice little length. And if you've got some meter, you'll do a special move at the end. Triangle will usually got you like a 2-hit auto combo. And circle got you just like one big swing. And that's as far as we got, really, as we were playing this game. But I will say, if you want to look fancy and flashy while playing a game, that is a very easy game to like pick up and look like you're doing some, like you're wrecking shop. I will say, during the Friday Night Fights, we looked proficient at fighting games. And then we turned on Street Fighter. Then we looked a lot less proficient at fighting
games. Yeah, I was watching you guys, and I'm just like, there's a lot of jumping going on right now. What's going on here? It doesn't help that I've been watching a few like fighting game-only streamers lately, and I'm just like, holy shit, I need to up my SF or my Street Fighter game.
And as Alcade said, the Under Night In Birth is a hyper-competitive fighting game. It's actually going to be at Evo this year.
Hmm.
If Evo happens.
Okay, this is where I want to ask the question of, if coronavirus is becoming that much of an issue, do you think anyone would just try and host an online-only event? Or is that going to be just way too sketch, thanks to things like lag switchers and so forth?
I would have... So I couldn't see Evo being held online-only. But, like, I could see your Fortnite Nationals and your other big tournaments.
Because fighting games always have a host, right?
Yes.
So there's going to be like an unfair advantage to the person hosting the event. There's no way to regulate
things.
Well,
unless they like actually rent out server space.
Well, but I mean, but that's not part of the netcode, right? I feel like the best way they could do it is if they ran something like Parsec and ran a local copy at the quote-unquote official server or official
and made sure
place.
That people had equivalent connections to that.
Yeah, exactly. But
Alcade actually says that League has dedicated servers for events.
Yes, they do. They actually have redundant servers, in fact. So if the game goes down or a server goes down, they can actually just go to their B server and keep playing the game. They actually had a chrono break yesterday, which means they play through the entire course of the game through an automation to get back to the point where the game crashed.
Mm.
It's it was nice. Very, very, say what you will about the game, but those guys know how to run redundant things. Yeah, they do a good job on that end. I think
small
the delay was
indie
only
company.
Like 7 minutes or so. Small indie company
has mastered the tournament scene.
Suppressing
still
their female
out
coworkers
a
too, man.
Oh yeah.
Who knew you just had to like have a very unfriendly, misogynistic workplace to excel at online tournaments? Actually, that's not true. Clash is not working. So that's like the online version for, you know, pubs like us to play.
Mm-hmm.
But pubs.
But yeah. So maybe they could do something, trying something online. But yeah, that's if it happens. Cause I just read, Ooh, Granblue's coming out for PC. Nice.
Already bought it on PlayStation 4. Feels bad.
I did not buy it on PlayStation 4 because it's really hard for me to actually sit down and play the PlayStation now because my wife is always on it.
Wait, Neil, should I pick up Granblue and should we master? Should we hone our skills together?
No.
Would you play DBZ Fighters with me since I can't play with Cookie because he just suplexes me repeatedly?
Well,
I can't help it. I like 17.
I was thinking at some point to boot it up just to play a bit on stream, but I got it mostly, or we got it, I should say, because Tiff's a huge Granblue fan.
Oh,
she
really
plays the browser slash mobile game. Yeah, the gacha game, the shit ton. It looks really good. Like, I love the art style to it. And they're working on a game called Granblue Fantasy Relink, which is going to be like an action RPG or action character action game that looks really cool. And it's like everything about Granblue is right up my alley. Like the fantasy setting, the high fantasy, but like not Lord of the Rings in terms. It's like more Record of Lotus War and less Lord of the Rings. It's like it's exactly what I want out of a fantasy game. The action looks great. Everything about it looks awesome.
I mean, would you just call Lord of the Rings Western fantasy, like since it's touched so much of that, or it doesn't deserve that attribution?
I don't know. It's like, I don't think it's necessarily Western fantasy either, but maybe I'm giving too much credit to like Skyrim as what I would call Western fantasy, that sort of thing, where
Skyrim is Western because it's more medieval themes than, well, Granblue's pretty medieval-ish themed. There's dragons.
Yeah,
and
it's medieval-ish. It's just that, like, and so that's the thing. You can't call it, like, Eastern fantasy within the sense of, like, the Shogunate. And it's not like Sekiro in terms of, you know, like, medieval Japan. It's still, like, Western European-style fantasy, but it looks more anime, and elves don't look like deformed, weird wood creatures that are, like, freakishly tall and lanky.
Those are just wood elves. High elves are just tall and lanky.
That's true.
You got your half elves. But you don't like the way it feels with the like Smash Brothers like settings that it has?
Wait, what are you talking about the game yet? I haven't played the game yet. Yeah. So.
Oh, you haven't played the game yet?
No, it's like we got the collector's box sitting there looking pretty, looked at some of the content and stuff, but I have yet to actually take my PlayStation 4 out of like the stream area up to like a TV that it can be played on, because this is not like a conducive environment here to like play games with someone else. It's two desks, or it's two computers hooked up to do two monitors, a digital mixer, a preamp, hard drives, and a lot of trash. Not
Neil
really
was
trash
the second,
but.
I would like to say that Neil was the second Fancy Robin podcast member to be called a boomer at this point.
Oh, was I just called? Lotus War. You're letting your boomer show, Mr. Ramen. Dude, Lotus War is great. Fucking awesome.
So now we just need to get Scott to show his age, and then we'll be a asthmatic boomer.
No.
I'm the energy, baby. I'm fresh.
Yeah, the
I'm so young and hip.
Scott's the kind of guy that has avocado toast every day.
I'm the kind of guy who's on TikTok.
Gross. Okay.
He grinds up his own tea.
But no.
I'm wearing plaid right now. Yes, I know. I live in the mountains. I drink high quality coffee that I brew myself.
And your door,
best believe.
Your door opens up to heaven.
My door does open up to heaven.
Best believe if he could grow a mustache,
fancy leather
twirl.
Shoes. The mustache that I can grow to any listener who is curious why I don't have the like classic hipster facial hair of any variety is because I can only grow a neck beard, which we all agree and understand is foul, and the mustache game ends up looking much too similar to like a classic French villain of like the spindly mustache of the cartoon era.
Whoa, no, that'd be fine.
Oh,
yeah,
yes,
what the hell?
That is very hipster.
I thought you were going to talk about, like, I don't know.
Dirty Sanchez?
Yeah, have you ever exactly.
Have you ever seen, like, a bald, beardless man with just that, though? I mean, there are, like...
Dr. Robotnik.
The number of crimes that could be pinned on me that wouldn't be mine that the police wouldn't bother investigating further would just absolutely skyrocket. I have to protect my safety here.
So you'd be afraid that people would put the blame on you for kidnapping animals and putting them inside of machines?
Yes.
What has Robotnik really done wrong is my question. Like, are we not caging up animals at the Humane Center anyways, or Humane Society?
He's just making zoos. That's all he's doing.
That's really all he's bad doing. Zoos.
Dr. Robotnik is the second coming of Noah, okay? Biblical Noah, all right?
Just birds and squirrels. He's like, he's like, instead of two of each animal, I'm just going to have 50% birds, 50% squirrels.
Welcome, nephew. Welcome.
I don't even know where we take this from now.
I think, unfortunately, we are on the precipice of wrapping up.
Yeah. If you have comments or questions, you could be chatting them right now. Chatting them, saying them in message. Or if you're listening to the podcast, you can write into podcast@fancyramen.com.
Don't hesitate to look out for us at Twitch at www.twitch.tv/cookiescamilk, where 9 viewers are currently watching from now. Or you can go to the Fancy Ramen TV /Fancy Ramen TV. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Yeah. On Twitch, find us at /Fancy Ramen TV/CookieScamilk. Our
slash
friends of the pod, Jay Frey All Day and Artie Strongman, have their own channels as well. Artie Strongman is separated by underscores between each word.
If you're watching the VOD of this, you can actually see all the social medias down there at this That's exact right. moment. Don't hesitate to follow the Twitter at Fancy Ramen TV.
Fancy Ramen TV for girls and Knuckles, featuring Dante from the Devil May Cry series. That's it. That's the podcast name.
I like it.
Episode 153 of Fancy Ramen for girls and Knuckles, featuring Dante from the Devil May Cry series.
Have I guess also don't hesitate to follow the new... Sorry to interrupt you. I just added the new Fancy Ramen... Fancy Ramen Cookie YouTube channel, which I'll be adding to the thing of the pod at the bottom there. After you.
Right there.
And
right
to interrupt there. Neil one right more there. Time. Yeah. do not forget to tell friends and family. It's the best way to grow the pod. And the more the pod grows, the more we spend time with these promotionals to get even more people. It is a self-repeating cycle.
Okay, guys. Before I forget, click the like button down below. There's subscriptions over here on the side in this panel. And these guys are losers right to the sides of me. I'm the cool one. Hey, good to know you all. Thank you very much for listening.
Don't forget to like and subscribe. That was the Fancy Ramen Podcast. And you're going to listen to our beautiful voices for a little bit longer.